It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Hell yeah, welcome to L2L, Learning to Listen, the podcast. We've got a bargain bin episode for you today. We're going to be talking all about those Backstreet Boys, or should I say men?
Backstreet Men.
Let me tell you what we're talking about. This is L2L, so we're talking about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening, so that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement, the way artists intended. This is not a biography show, so if that's what you're looking for, you're in the wrong spot. But if you're here for pure guttural and visceral reaction to the music that we're listening to, then welcome aboard. My name is Quinn. I've got my co-hosts with me. Of course, on the drops, DJ Charlie Scream.
Charlie Scream.
Ooh, he's trying.
All right. He's also a lord now, so, you know, just... He's a young Australian pop star. Today's BSB expert is going to be, of course, our 90s nostalgia extraordinaire. Expert. I don't know how many titles I can give you. Naomi Carmack, how's it going?
Butt sex. It felt right.
Wow, butt sex. I think you forgot that this is the actual like usual show now, and
we left all that in the previous.
That's the Patreon, patreon.com/learningtolisten, if you want to hear Naomi talk about butt sex.
Yeah.
That's where you go. patreon.com/learningtolisten. Okay, this is a bargain bin episode. So we're gonna get into it today.
Get in the bin.
Today, bargain bin. If you haven't listened to one of these before, a little looser format than normal, as you can probably already tell. But what we do is we tend to go find these albums that have been otherwise overlooked or much maligned, or just, you know, something to dust off and take a look at and, you know, see, does it deserve another chance? Should it be in the bargain bin or should it be up on the holy moly wall? Today,
we are
talking about Never Gone by the Backstreet Boys. Never Gone is the fifth studio album, fourth in the U.S. I don't know what that's about. Released by American vocal group Backstreet Boys as the follow-up to their third in the U.S. studio album, Black and Blue, after a short hiatus. Never Gone was originally due for release in 2004, but the release date for the album was pushed to June 14th, 2005 for unknown reasons. Album varies musically from their previous albums, moving away from teen pop into pop for adults. Unlike previous albums, the album featured only live instruments. I think that's a lie, but we'll get into that. The album is named after a song on it that mourns the loss of Kevin Richardson's father, who is also Brian Littrell's uncle. And it sold over 3 million copies worldwide. So, not a failure.
That's not bad.
That's not too shabby.
In comparison to their other releases, that's not great. But
fails in comparison.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, I decided with this one, instead of going for something that's just like, this is the worst album ever, this is, you can't listen to this or whatever, I was like, one that's like critically the worst album in an otherwise very successful band's career. On Metacritic, this somehow pops up as like one of the like 17th worst like reviewed album overall. And I think it just comes from a handful of like really harsh initial, like, you know, critiques that nobody's gone back and you know, reassessed, or, you know, whatever. They just like, I'll just read you a couple, I think, of those.
Yeah, what do you got?
That was very early. Like Rolling Stone said, the Backstreet Men rarely accelerate beyond a mid-tempo thud.
Ouch.
Blender said, Never Gone's rock ballads are painfully and sometimes powerfully earnest demands for meaning and redemption. Let's see. Entertainment Weekly said, this corny comeback is hardly a triumphant return. You know, that's like the sentiment. People were just not impressed with this thing. What stops the Backstreet Boys from being any fun is, I think, their inability/refusal to wink at the audience. to let them know, you know, we're in on the joke. That was Pop Matters.
You kind of wonder what critics expect the band to do, because they want them to make the same music that they've always been making and never grow up, because if they did that, they'd get a harsh review too. So I think they are in this just like, they're in a position where they're either going to never grow up and, or they're going to move forward like a boy band should as they're getting older. They're men now, you know.
They were no longer Backstreet Boys. They were now Backstreet Men.
Yeah. And I just think like critics have never taken boy bands seriously because critics don't take girls' interests seriously.
Well, okay. That's, yeah, definitely something to talk about. First, before we get too far into it, though, you know, I want to ask everybody if how aware now, Naomi, you're even wearing a Backstreet Boys hat right now. So I feel like, you know, you might know something about the band.
I've heard of them.
Of the group. You know, Charlie, were you ever a big Backstreet Boys fan? Were you like, you know?
No, I'm not following around on tour or nothing like that, but I've definitely heard of them and of a bunch of their songs. None of these ones, though.
Yeah. I don't. What year did they break specifically?
I want to say it was like, well, in Europe, they broke first, and that was back in like 95, 96, probably 96.
Okay. Yeah, which makes sense.
Then it came back over this way.
Because to me, if I think about the Backstreet Boys, I just remember that suddenly girls, when I was in high school, like grade 10, like so the beginning of high school, all of a sudden, well, a lot of girls in my class were like very excited about the Backstreet Boys. And, mm-hmm. you know, there was a lot of tittering going on about this group. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me quite like very similarly to when I was in elementary school and girls were freaking out over the New Kids. And I was like, man,
things happening all over again.
The cycle started again. Yeah.
I remember clearly my friend Megan telling me that in the liner notes to the first Backstreet Boys album, that because they were under the same management as the New Kids on the Block, that there was a dedication to, or like producers or something. I don't know how it worked. Right. But like, there was a
couple of similar people involved.
Yeah. But there was a dedication. She showed it to me that was like, you know, I don't know what it said verbatim, but like it said something about like, oh, you put up with the New Kids on the Block. And so now you've got us on your hands or something like that. Well, like it was weird though, because you'd think like they didn't put that in themselves. Somebody was like, hey, you know, it would be a nice little wink and a nod. Yeah, whatever. Sell the lineage to sell it to fans to be like, hey, if you like the New Kids on the Block, you're gonna
The guy who put Backstreet Boys together, Lou Pearlman, who's now been in jail and he's dead. dude really like ripped off his bands. But anyway, he got the idea of putting together the Backstreet Boys because he ran like an airline company. And he would rent out private jets to artists. So back when New Kids were the big thing, he was renting them private planes all the time. And then he was seeing how this was like, all he could see was dollar figures looking at these guys, right? So he's like, I got to do that. And that's how he went ahead and tried to take from that and put Backstreet together.
Huh.
Okay, interesting. So now after how many albums? It's weird, apparently. Four worldwide, but only three in the US.
Yeah, I think that's because the European releases, I think there was an extra one before they came here or came over to North America.
US couldn't handle that one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess they were probably just testing markets, right? Be like, let's get this marketing right and then before we bring it over to the US.
There's always been more of a market for this type of music in Europe. Everywhere it's easier to start in Europe for a lot of different genres. So it worked. Well,
this album was a comeback album, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had had a greatest hits album in the meantime.
Yeah.
And then the last album before that, I don't know at all.
Black and Blue?
Yeah. What would be some of like the singles that we would recognize off of that?
The Call. The Shape of My Heart, and More Than That. Those were the three singles from Black and Blue.
Yeah, I don't think those don't ring a bell to me. So you can just shows you that I was not paying attention.
It's hard to top I Want It That Way. I Want It That Way is the perfect pop song. And it's pretty much cemented its place in pop history, you know? So to try to outdo that song would be tough.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. And, you know, it's funny because I think that song completely just overshadows almost their entire career to this point.
Yeah, like, that's the big one.
You host karaoke. I've hosted karaoke. Like, if people are going to do a Backstreet Boys song, what song are they doing?
Yeah.
I Want It That Way. And they're dragging all their friends up on stage and they're
going to have the whole group up there.
It's always a group song. Always.
Always.
And it's usually the guys doing it too. See, I find that it's usually guys getting together and doing
it. Yeah. You know what? There's I've definitely witnessed it go both ways, but for sure, there's a lot more guys that just do it like kind of ironically, but then they really get into it.
Ironically, like, but they really had to have that reason to get up there to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like just being totally silly and fun with it. I like it when they do it. I think it's fun.
Totally. Totally. Okay. But so then after however many years, for whatever reason, I guess there was just some personal stuff going on. And they were figuring some stuff out, whatever. They decided they wanted to move in a new direction. And that direction came out as Never Gone. And the idea being that this is going to be a more mature record. We're not Backstreet Boys anymore. We're Backstreet Men, although we're still called the Backstreet Boys. But it sounds like the marketing must have said men instead of boys or something like that. Because it comes up every time I look this album up, like all these reviews and stuff like that. People are always bringing up this idea of like men, the Backstreet Men.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they do that because I don't think their fan base really would have noticed the difference. I think they would have just been like, oh, it's the same guys making new music. You know what I mean?
New music, yeah.
They didn't need to have that men thing shoved down their face. Like, we know.
Okay. So now I assume that you have heard this album probably multiple times.
Yep.
And would you say you're a fan of this album?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's good pop music.
Okay. Now would it be your favorite of the Backstreet Boys albums?
No.
Where, if you were to personally rank it, and that includes everything that's come out till today.
Okay.
Like just roughly, where would you throw it?
I would put it maybe third. I'd put it third.
Third overall. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Wow. Now, Charlie, I'm going to ask you.
Yeah. Same questions?
Pretty much. Have you ever heard this record before?
I've never heard this record before. I've never heard one song off of this record before today.
No, I have never sat down and listened to any Backstreet Boy album all the way through.
You know what? I have a sister, and she listened to it. So I've heard some.
My sister was, she was 98 Degrees. She was Nick Lachey and the other two guys. I don't know. Yeah, that was her.
Yeah, there's four in there, but yeah.
But she went through a couple of phases real quickly, though. You know how you do that when you're young. But when she went through her boy band phase, it was all 98 Degrees.
Also, my wife is a big fan. So,
of the BS men.
BSBs. Yeah,
the BSBs. So is Andrews. Yeah.
So is Andrew. Oh no, Andrew's wife.
Andrew. Yeah. Our friend Andrew Scott. Andrew's wife, Julie, is a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Like, obviously, you know, I had some friends in high school, girls I knew that were, as I was mentioning before, big fans. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like me and my core group of friends were not sitting around listening to Backstreet Boys, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. If anything, to us, it was just like, you know, the annoying last half hour of like the Much Music countdown.
Right? And if you're in the States, it was TRL, like, they were at the top at every time. They'd have to retire their songs for them
because they just kept getting voted in and in
and in. Nothing else is getting up there.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I get that. So it was interesting, though. Of course, I think of the Backstreet Boys even now. I think of them pretty much as 100% locked in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Their sound, their look, their marketing, everything about them, that whole boy band era, just locked in the 90s, right?
Mm, yeah.
So the fact that they decided to like update their look and sound and everything, I feel like this was less about being more mature more about being more relevant for the 2000s. I feel like that maturity angle was just that they hadn't put anything out for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like, this is obviously my first listen through this, Charlie. This is probably your first listen through this, right?
Never heard any of these songs before.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like, you know, and I'm fine with like, if it would have been something I would have heard on the radio somewhere at some point, I would have been like, oh yeah, I've heard this before.
Yeah, yeah. No, I didn't recognize a single song. Didn't recognize a single.
I kept waiting for that moment where you're like a refrain or something. Yeah, and you're like, that's the one. Okay.
No. Yeah.
So I feel like those 3 million record sales apparently were mostly in Japan.
Mm.
This record sold huge in Japan. Apparently it was like the second or third highest selling, at least disc from like a Western artist or something like that.
Oh, wow.
In the year that it came out in 2005.
Mm.
But... Mm. You know, the Japanese have a taste for pop, you know.
Yeah.
So 100% completely just going, okay, this is the most context I had about this was that it came out in 2005 and that the marketing around it was the whole like, oh, we're more mature and you know, going for more of an adult angle. I would say my biggest reaction right off the bat was I'm like, man, this is just so 2000s. This sounds like if earlier Backstreet Boys sounds like the 90s, this sounds like the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And like not just like what was happening in pop music in the early 2000s, but just what was happening in the early 2000s, just short of this being having like rap rock on it.
That's funny that you should say that because I listened to, what's the name of the very first song on the album?
Incomplete. And I got Evanescence vibes.
No, well, sort of. I actually did some looking to see if it was a Linkin Park cover.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, is this Linkin Park without like the bite to it or whatever?
Yeah. This is like all the teeth taken away from like Linkin Park or Evanescence or just that little bit that more
you
like
some strings in there and
and a little more strain in the vocals. I noticed another thing too. Overall, this whole album, they go a little grittier on the vocals. Now, not so much, but just a little bit.
Not like actual Linkin Park gritty, but like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just a little gravel. Just a little
There's more gravel. And that's got to be mostly because of Nick Carter, because I think that's mostly his voice and mostly his influence when you got that gravel sound, because he was very much raised on like Journey.
He shows up and he's like, no, guys, this is what I'm doing.
Brian Adams and
this is what I'm doing for this album.
Yeah, he's like the rock popper of the group. So in a lot of those instances, it's Nick's voice. AJ can pull that off too, but
okay, well, that's interesting. This is
angstiness. Yeah,
going to be great about having talking to you about this record in particular. Is okay, yeah. Like so, Charlie. Obviously, we both got hit by that vibe, that like that radio alternative rock of that era.
I was really waiting for some
like a little but then they said it's all live instruments on here.
I want to know where you think that there wasn't live.
But we'll get into it, but I'll say right off the bat, Siberia is clearly a loop.
Fuck, I love that song. That's probably my favorite song on the album.
You can hear the edit on the loop. You can hear it. It's like you guys are lying. Like,
are they lying or is Wikipedia lying?
Well, Wikipedia is most definitely lying, you know. But
Wikipedia lies. It's what it does.
That's what I mean, though. Is like with all the production on this album, it's so over the top with the production. Like it works in some spots.
There's a lot of layers. Sure. Yes.
Mm. Oh man, but there isn't a song that doesn't have like. First, you can know they have like a full rock band like arrangement, but not just guitar, bass, drums. It's like just piano, keyboards. All kinds of strings. Like whatever. Yeah. And then they add in like orchestration, strings. Every once in a while you hear like more layers of like percussion, like, you know, like a timpani will get in there, a gong will get in there. You're like, yeah, real way to bring it back down to earth, you guys. Like
I would agree with you where I'd like to see that there was actually an orchestra involved in the recording where that does seem somewhat doubtful.
Sure.
I mean, it might have been. But there's definitely samples. There's definitely a lot of effects on the vocals. There's definitely a lot of auto-tune.
That's my other note. The other note I made for this album
is the auto-tune. Auto-tune is out of control.
They've got so much money. Why didn't they pay for decent auto-tune?
I wrote down two. Yeah, I wrote down
why
two.
Why is it so bad? Words,
the most egregious, Poster Girl and Lose It All.
Yeah. Why is it so bad? Mm-hmm. They have much money at this point.
I think if I could tell where it came in the most is when they were harmonizing. Really? And I don't know if that's because you could hear it the best or if that's where they're just trying to get them to tighten up their harmonies. Right. These guys can sing, right?
Yeah,
they can. There's no doubt whether you like them or hate them that these guys are good vocalists and they know how to harmonize.
I think in this case, it's more of a case of like producers being lazy in the studio. They have a new tool, auto-tune still.
Because you got a lot of big, you got Max Martin's all over this thing, you know?
Who's Max Martin?
Max Martin is probably the biggest pop producer of our generation.
His name's come up in podcast before.
Yeah, he's Swedish. And he's written and produced some of the biggest pop hits of all time. Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys. Like his name was on almost everything in 1999 that came out. So Max Martin's a big deal. And he's on this quite a bit too.
Hmm.
So, okay. Right. So right off that bat, right, we get the strong, like 90s alternative or 80s. God, I'm keep going backwards, but let's go up forward a decade. 2000s, hard rock, right? Like, you know, obviously Charlie and I both picked up on that. And then right away, the next song, I'm like, this could have been written for Avril Lavigne. This could have been written for Simple Plan. This could have been written for Good Charlotte. The song,
you think it's just want it's you to know. Pop punk though.
It's pop punk in the way that radio pop punk at the time was, you know, like, you know, we can get into semantics with genre or whatever, but
We don't need to.
That's a slippery.
But like, you know, but the kind of pop, let's just call it pop music, the kind of guitar driven pop music that, like, you know, those guys were making at the time, where they were like, oh, we're spiking up our hair and wearing like our eyeliner a little thicker, so we're punk rock.
Oh, good. I'm glad you saw the music video then.
Is that really what it looked like?
Yeah. You haven't seen the music video?
No.
They are literally dressed up as an 80s fucking metal band.
Oh, you know what? I did see. I
driving around in a car, like picking up chicks and going to tailgate at the concert.
Okay. So when I listened to this, I listened to it on YouTube so that it wasn't in my algorithm on Spotify.
And how dare it end up there?
I don't need that sneaking in later.
Yeah.
See that video and they were like, was the characters in that video a rock band called Sphincter?
Yes.
Was that what that was? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's funny.
It was funny. That took me for a second. I was like, hey, what's happening?
Maybe but for a little bonus material at the very end of the episode, patreon.com/learning to listen.
We have to watch it.
We'll watch it.
It's funny.
Watch
it.
But that makes so much sense to me because that's a lot of what those bands were doing at the time too, is they were copying that vibe. But like look at the Sum 41 where they're like, they're playing pop punk, but they're like, but we're Maiden fans, you know, and they're putting spiky bracelets on and, you know, going, you know, I mean,
pain, pleasure.
They would lean into it a little bit more. But then again, this album is a very rock ballad album.
Yeah.
Like, there is a rock ballad vibe that goes through this whole album. But so the note I made at this point, though, I'm only two or three songs in. And I sit down and I go, okay, I'm waiting for this more mature, more introspective, little like, you know, singer-songwritery. And I go, so this is supposed to be more adult contemporary pop? Does that just mean more boring?
That's a good point.
They're trying to, appeal.
Because I'm like, I'm not really seeing the big, big difference. I'm like, this is this current pop music of 2005. It's not that it's more adult. Like, if sounding more like Good Charlotte is more adult, then dear God.
then I don't want to grow up.
Well, then no wonder millennials turned out the way they did.
Well, it's definitely more rock ballady. I don't, what do you think about lyrically, though? Do you think lyrically there's a maturity to it at all? Because
it's still all these take me back lyrics, like, girl, I was so wrong. Please take me back.
That's basically all that this album was, right? It was like a bunch of breakups in Mourning One Death or something.
The very last song, It Would Never Gone, which is one unfortunately, is it like not a very strong song? It's weird that
it's actually pretty forgettable in the mix of the songs.
It's completely forgettable. I listened to this album twice through, and the second time I heard it through, I was like, did I hear this song the first time?
It's too bad too, because it's like, it's the one that's the actually heartfelt song that's sure. coming from, mm-hmm. you know, sincerity.
Yeah. I don't think they were taking any chances lyrically here. I think they were still playing to their base. They were still going for like, look, the girls who liked us in high school still like us in their 20s. If we mm-hmm. sing the same kind of like, girl, I'm so sorry, I screwed everything up, but it's always been you kind of lyrics, mm-hmm. right? You know, this is mm-hmm. just, this is a female fantasy. This is still playing to that line, but it's still playing that card of, you know, yeah. this is not a record made for men.
I don't think that the Backstreet Boys ever had a thing in mind where they were like, oh, we have to make an album that dudes like too. I don't think they've ever been like having the urge to go out and please everybody. I think they've always just, you know, wanted to please whoever their fan base already was, but mm-hmm. at the same time, try to delve a little more into their own influences with what they were coming up with mm. and maybe less. Because at this point in your career, you can do a little bit more that you want to do and less what the record company wants you to do. But that being said, when you look at the writing credits, there's not that much of from their them. Input.
No, I think Howie wrote the most on this one.
Yeah.
And then Kevin on the last song.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was actually surprising to me because I thought the guys would have started writing a little more.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they're not really.
Yeah.
Not
so
really
I just,
writing.
I think the only choices here are just to be contemporary to what was going on. And the idea of it being a more mature album was just marketing. I think it's just contemporary pop. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're just sounding like the bands and other pop artists of the time. Now, okay, here's a vocal thing that I got to ask you about, Naomi. Who is singing, who, or at least the first verse takes the lead vocal on Crawling Back to You?
I think that would have been Brian Littrell.
Is he known for making sucking noises when he sings?
No. Because
it was really distracting that he's the whole time he's going
in the microphone
and they're not editing it out. Like you can tell he's breathing, like he's doing controlled breathing for the singing, but it is way up in the mix. Like I think they left it in being like, no, it's raw. It shows that you're like,
it's interesting because I've never noticed that. I'll have to notice one when I listen again, but Brian's known as having one of the best tones vocally in the group. Like Brian's stuff is, he's a very relaxing voice to listen to, but I've never noticed the sucking thing. I hope I'm calling out the right guy.
Well, that's just it. Is
well,
I
someone's sucking.
I cannot from
someone's
the vocals,
literally sucking.
I cannot from the vocals identify one guy to the next. I don't know. I'd have to see them singing in person to know.
Mm.
Like I think maybe I could pick out Nick Carter just because of the, you know,
because of the angsty.
Yeah, because he's the one that exactly. He's more likely to do that thing. Like he's always the one when the camera's panning across the shot in the video. He's the one who's standing just a little bit back from the camera, going, yeah.
Nick's the one like on the ground, like pounding it with like with feelings.
Yeah. His bangs, swoopy bangs are getting in his eye.
His bowl cut swaying back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the day. Of the three big boy bands of this era, I would say that this one is cool for the fact that all five members sing a lot. Like all five of them have predominant amounts of leads and
they
such.
They all do about 20%.
Not quite, but they all, I think, have more vocal leads than in NSYNC and New Kids on the Block. So all they're fantastic singers, but that sucky noise thing. I don't know. I didn't notice that.
Listen to it again and just listen to the vocal. I'm pretty sure it's most of the first verse you hear it, maybe into the chorus. But it's definitely, I know it's happening. He's breathing. He's, you know, he's giving the line and then he's taking a breath in and it's just, it's way up in the mix. And it's like, I don't know why, like it's a weird choice to leave it in. I think it's intentional to make like, well, maybe the heavy breathing makes it more emotive or something or in their heads mm-hmm. or in their, but me listening to it in headphones, I was like, guys,
I'm gonna definitely listen to that again. But,
you're producing the shit out of this album and it's, you know what it's the equivalent of? It's like when you listen to somebody playing an acoustic guitar on an album and then you hear that they've got brand new strings that are still kind of dry. And so as they move their fingers up and down, you hear that
the squeak.
The squeak. Yeah.
Squeak. And
sometimes that's a good sound, but sometimes it's too obvious. It's and like, it sticks in your ear.
It can be distracting, right? It really depends. But okay, so sucking noises aside, crawling back to you is exactly what we're talking about the theme of the album, where they're all like take me back songs or I miss you songs or like it's gonna be you and me forever.
Banging on your front door.
Yeah, except I think this one takes it a little too far. I get that they're like trying to play into this female fantasy of a guy who just so desperately wants you back. He made such a mistake. But it's got all these themes of him like, I don't care if you don't answer the door. I'm going to stand here until like, you know, until you see me crying or whatever.
Get out of here, creeper.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, these are my awkward vibes.
There's a lot of songs throughout history where it's these dudes are giving out super stalker vibes, but it's like, everyone's like, oh, that's so romantic.
So
like,
sweet.
What the fuck? You know, I don't know if I would have noticed that. Something like there's a Clay Aiken song called Invisible.
Okay.
If I were invisible, then I would just watch you in your room. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. But I know that song. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, didn't they think while they were writing that at all that this would be fucked up? But anyway, I'm crawling back to you. It's funny because it kind of contradicts what women want, right? Because women always want a bad boy. They want the guy who's like, you know, confident and slightly arrogant. And we a lot of times mistake confidence for assholes, right?
Or assholes for confidence.
Yeah. But then a song like where they're begging you for your forgiveness and begging you to take them back. Why do we go, oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, I'll take you back. When that's not really what we seem to want.
Y'all's just needy. Well,
are you saying that women are contradictory and paradoxical in nature and that
yeah,
they only want what they can't have?
We might not even know what we want. So,
yeah. Are you saying Naomi Carmack, not me, Quinn Clark, are you saying that women are fickle?
I could literally say, I would love it if Nick Carter begged me to take him back. But then I'd be like, at the same time,
he's
like,
outside of your door,
I'd probably
doing
more
it.
Attracted to him if he ignored me.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
You know, like, absolutely. It's just, I don't think we can explain why we do that. But crawling back to you, I get it. It's a little beggy.
Mm-hmm. A little beggy.
I'm into the, you know, and you know, I'm not a lyric person. So I think the thing that grabs me about a lot of this pop music is the melodies, as it is with most things.
Now the issue here, I think, on this album being though, that is like, okay, at least with the Backstreet Boys in the previous albums, I mean, not that I've listened to them through, but I know what hit the radio and what my friends were listening to and whatnot, is there was at least some upbeat numbers. You know?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know they were known for their ballads, so maybe they lean into their ballads.
There's no bangers on here, right?
Well, not the kind of bangers that are like gonna fill a dance floor at a club, right?
Yeah.
You know, and off the top of my head, if I think of like boy band bangers, you know, I might go to
Larger
like,
Than Life.
Yeah, there you go. I was gonna say maybe that was the role that other boy bands, contemporary boy bands filled, like NSYNC had a little bit more of that vibe, you know. They had like Bye 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 and, you know, that sort of
shit.
You're
right. Backstreet was always a little more mid-tempo compared to NSYNC.
Yeah, they were leaning in a little. They didn't quite have the soul of like a Boys to Men.
Mm-hmm.
But they were more in that lane, you know, where they were trying to talk to your heart. But anyway, I guess.
And your peach.
Yeah, in your peach.
Talk to your peach, yeah.
Talk to my peach.
Patreon.com/learningtolisten if you want to know what we're talking about. Okay, but but I think that's where the problem with this one was, where it's like it just never gets out of that. It kind of does a little bit towards the second half of the album, but it just doesn't deliver enough in the first half of the album.
The only song with a bit of a punch to it, I think, is My Beautiful Woman.
Yeah, that's one song that stands out a little bit as like it's not as easy to pin down like the vibe or the genre they were going for on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, okay.
I like the feel of that song a lot.
Mm-hmm. There's
it
a real,
creeps up on you. It's nice.
There's like the real optimistic song on here, which, okay, is this Is this a Nick Carter song? Weird World?
Yeah, I'd say he's pretty prominent on it. I'm not very good at remembering who sang what on each track. Weird World is the most different song on the album.
Noticed it's not the smoothest vocal as like the lead, but I think it's almost like on purpose, maybe. I don't know, it's a choice.
Charlie, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that you seem to be like, every time Quinn was like, well, who's this? And you're like, oh, this is probably this person. Who's this? Well, this person. So I thought you had it dialed in. You were like, that's this guy.
Yeah, not always. Okay, for instance, for Siberia, that's mostly Brian. Especially those verses. That's mostly Brian.
Okay.
And Siberia is a slower track. I think it's probably the most scaled down of all the tracks on the album for production wise, but it like melodically, I think it's brilliantly written. The chorus is cool too. What's happening
in that song?
Da, 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 da,
but like,
da. The, Siberia, so that's the one that's clearly a loop, by the way.
What's the story of that song? Is that they are in Siberia for some reason and they're separated from their...
No, it's a metaphor, Charlie. They're not literally in Siberia.
The chorus lyric is, my heart did time in Siberia.
Like they're doing science in some Siberian outpost or something and they have no contact with the...
I get really cold when I listen to this song. I get the goosebumps. I'm freezing.
Listen, there's times that Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, where we live and record this podcast, has been as cold, if not colder, than Siberia. So,
oh yeah.
So maybe we can identify with this song.
We get those Siberia vibes.
Maybe but by the way, listen to the beginning of that song again. It's clearly a loop. You can hear the edit where it loops again. It's like, which is fine.
A loop which was played on literal actual instruments, Quinn.
Which is fine. Yes, you might be correct. But I'm just saying, I don't know. Maybe I'm just taking it on Wikipedia maybe too much. I didn't read the actual marketing.
You did so much research.
The guys themselves are just like, we didn't fucking say we did that.
Yeah, don't put words in our mouth.
I was expecting, like, you know, that album where the Monkees actually played all their own instruments, and instead I just got another Backstreet Boys album. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, fuck.
Okay, but back to Weird World. Is okay, this is what's interesting to me, though, is what is with the weird jingoistic, like, pro troops, like rah-rah military lyrics in that one?
Oh, I didn't notice the lyrics, but my least favorite song on the album.
So it's about being optimistic about, like, oh, the world is weird, but like, hey, we got each other, kind of whatever.
Oh,
there's a lyric comes in, I think it's the second verse, says, send a message to a GI in the desert. Thank you, man, for bringing on another dawn. He's obviously referring to
thanks for freedom, man.
Yeah, but like, he's obviously in the desert. He's literally talking about like Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the US invaded in 2003 and only just left the Middle East, well, Afghanistan, just last year.
And that went well.
Yeah, yeah. So, but this is a point. This is a weird point. Like that lyric getting in there where it's like, hey, we got to be thankful because like you're over there fighting. The verse goes on to be like, if me and my girl are back here, we're going to have our first baby. And it's because you're over there fighting the good fight that we can have our baby here. And I'm just thinking like, I maybe understand the angle in 2005 where it's like, you know, support the troops, like that's the good thing. But then, you know, with some history behind us and some perspective and going like, I don't know if those lyrics age so well. I don't know if that verse ages so well. I wonder if these guys, they're politically like where they stand, if they would still be like, we supported the troops from day one. We still support the troops. That was a just and needed war. And it wasn't for oil or opium or whatever.
I don't expect that they're a very, very political band.
Do they ever get into politics? Like,
that's very, very soft politics right there. So vague that it's like, it's support just saying, troops. Hey, thanks, America. Dude, for risking your lives for us so that we could have a good life. Yeah. Well, it's not taking a stance on anything.
No, for me, what it really did, though, was solidify it in a time and place. Like, he refers to
a time marker on there for you.
Yeah, he like,
but that's you doing that because you just knew what was happening at that time.
Right, but that was the thing at the time too. Remember back then, it was, we were not us personally, but the zeitgeist, the public at large, there was a lot of pressure on celebrities to come out and make a statement about how they support the troops, you know, like,
I suppose. But you could literally write that in any fucking era. to support the troops. You could do that.
I know, but this is 2005 for sure. This is a 2005 support the troops.
I don't get what you're saying, because it honestly, like, 1990 was the first Iraq invasion, and then if it had come out in 92, that must be about the Iraq war. Because of when it came out.
Yeah, it would have been for sure. if this had come out during Operation Desert Storm, or, you know, but that only lasted like months, not fucking years.
That was the first time in my lifetime where there was a war happening that was like, that I knew you were
aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it was like super televised, and like you had actual correspondence there while Scud missiles are flying over. Like, so it freaked the shit out of me, because I was what, 11, 12, something like that.
Well, same as you know, it's so weird to think about it. Like, it almost sounds like something out of some like fucking Paul Verhoeven, like RoboCop, you know, fucking future.
The only thing I know about RoboCop is that RoboCop shot off a bunch of dicks.
Yeah,
he did not.
Thanks, Andrew Scott.
Shot off all the dicks.
No, but because here's the thing, I remember that very first Iraq war because there was trading cards that I bought at my local like Red Rooster, and they weren't even called Operation Desert Storm. They had changed the name because of marketing. When I bought the trading cards, they were Operation Desert Shield trading cards. I wish I still have them, because they would be worth so much money. But the fact that they manufactured, like, and when I opened them up, I had no idea. It was like generals and like, you know, like, yeah.
Norman,
like,
Schwarzkopf.
Yeah.
Like, cool, helicopters.
It's like, it's like my friend got a Colin Powell, and I was like, oh,
I didn't get a
Colin Powell. He's a big player.
And he's like, I'll trade you for your Scud missile. Anyway, weird time, right? But that's what I'm saying.
There was one correspondent, and I don't even remember his name, but I remember they were calling him the Scud Stud. Yeah, because all the girls were like, he's so dreamy, and look at him, he's so brave for being
here. Saying, you know, like, everybody's going on and on about how fucking brilliant Don't Look Up is, and I'm like,
I loved it, but that's barely satire.
It's so on the nose. Like, we were doing this, we've been doing this for years. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, no, I know what you're trying to say, but I honestly think that, and the US being so what's the word, patriotic all the time, I honestly believe that they could, any time of year, any time of the decade, would be making songs for the troops. It doesn't matter.
It's a very safe and soft. Yeah, you are correct when you say that too. It's like, you know, it's like the rest of the verse. The reason I picked out this specific stanza was because of the allusion to the desert.
I probably just personalized it a little bit to be about that.
Yeah, but the rest of it goes on to just be like, there's guys out there fighting for us every day. You know, I just, it was interesting. I was like, I don't know if it shows a little bit of the BSB's politics or their stand or whatever. Somebody wrote this for them, whatever. What the management was going like, yeah, get a pro troops verse in there.
Back in the day, I knew tons of things about them and their personal lives and their thoughts and stuff. But nowadays, I don't know really much, except like,
did they have relatives?
I think that a lot of the guys I think have very different viewpoints. They're all quite different from each other.
Well, isn't that the thing? That's how you put a boy band together. You got to get five different people who are completely different.
Yeah, you know, the cute one, the bad one.
Yeah.
Different, but not too different.
The sexy one, the older brooding one, and shit, what else? I can't remember how it goes.
Yeah. You boy bands are like, yeah, you
can wait. Five, like, and they're so all
you
have
can
to
hit
be,
all your markets.
Yeah, you can hit all your markets because you're going to market to different personality types. But the thing is, at the same time, at the end of the day, they're all going to be guys who are like, you know, willing to play along.
Right? Like, willing to play along to a certain point. Like, I believe, like, with the big three, it was a matter of, yes, there was a person in the beginning who helped get them together. The guys themselves also knew people in their, you know, music scene. They're like, I think this guy should come in because he's really good. And so he'd get brought in too. So yeah, I think in the beginning it was like, yeah, here we're trying to say, here we've got our bad boy, and here we've got our sexy guy, and here we've got our little cute guy. But I think once they've established who they are as humans, it all evolves from there and they become who they want to be as a band. I don't think that they're always going to be just this cookie cutter thing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Like, would I think there's a very, I think people look at boy bands with a very narrow opinion, which is unfortunate, but I get it if it's not your thing, but a lot of the guys in these groups are a lot more talented than people give them credit for.
Yeah, I think that that's just it, though, is that their talent is being exploited by a lot of outside interests and not their own.
You know, to a point.
When you're young and you're just kind of going along for the ride, you know, that's one thing. You're like, I mean, yeah. Yeah, you know, you like singing in choir. Somebody heard you. Next thing you know, you're recruited into this thing. It blows up into this like giant selling international touring band or whatever. Great. You know, but then there's going to be a point where you're like, you're not a kid anymore. You're not a teenager. You're an adult. And then, yeah, you're like, oh my God, the world perceives me one way. And I'm a person with my own thoughts and feelings and things like that. It's got to be kind of tough because now you're stuck where you're like, do I branch off? Do I leave? Do I go? Like, mm-hmm. Didn't Kevin leave after this album?
Yes, he did.
And
because he'd gotten married and he wanted to start a family and that's where he was in life.
Yeah, mentally he was somewhere else or whatever, but I mean, he's back, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know,
I think like being the case with this album. Okay, so they've had three huge smash albums in North America, and this album comes out and it's kind of like, this is our chance to prove ourselves. If we have staying power, this is going to be our turning point. Whatever this album will do will determine our future, you know? And I think like every boy band's had that situation. So I know you probably didn't hear much growth in it because you said it still sounds like the same pop music, but I think that I didn't hear them just trying to be relevant as much as you did. I felt that there was growth, but it's also hard to determine growth when you're not the songwriter.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
If you're not the songwriter, you're still telling someone else's story.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That's true. Yeah. It would be interesting to, I don't know if there is an album that came out later on that's more genuine to these guys' individual voices.
They've released at least two albums since this album.
And I
think more writing involved, but
yeah. And then I remember 2013 ish around there, they put out, I don't know what the album was called, but they had a single out called The Remix.
That was New Kids.
No, that's New Kids. No, sorry.
You were the one who told me about that song.
Sorry. I just completely conflated them.
That was hilarious. Cause when we were all at Hooligans and you were doing karaoke, but then you were playing songs right after and you put it on The Remix. And I'm like, is Quinn playing a New Kids song?
Okay.
And he's like, so, and you were like, yeah, I fucking like this one.
Okay. So you know what? I just realized that I was trying to think of anything I knew that the Backstreet Boys had done. And then now I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. That's the New Kids.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is that I think what I appreciated about that song at the time was that it had a more modern, updated pop feel to it, but it also played up the fun of, like, you know, it acknowledged the kind of like, it's that critique we were listening to earlier or read earlier about the, like, you know, not ever, you know, winking at your audience.
Right.
Yeah.
That single, that remix single the New Kids did, I think that's what I enjoyed about it. I was like, oh, I can enjoy this because I can tell these guys aren't taking themselves too seriously. They're kind of
so fun. Still tongue in cheek.
Yeah, they're kind of poking fun at their legacy a little bit, right? Which is a breath of fresh air, you know. It's self-deprecating, but not to the point you can't enjoy it too. You know, you can go like, all right, if they're not going to take themselves too seriously, then I'm going to have fun with it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in this case, this album just never achieves that, you know. And that's probably why it's hard to come on board, even for a more mature audience. Like, you know, for someone like me, who's obviously, this is not marketed at me. This is not aimed at my demographic, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It wasn't then, it isn't now, whatever. But I'm like, okay, well, if this is supposed to be a mature album, I'm going to find it in the songwriting. But I'm like, all I find is just a bunch of like, so over the top production, decent performances.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not hearing anybody's like, you know, genuine voice. And same thing, like, there's no joke to be let in on. It's just like, it's just more self-serious, more saccharine, you know, like, it's like, and it's like, well, there isn't enough fun on the record to like even kind of forgive some of that stuff.
That's fair. But you said too, like, that this wasn't marketed towards you, which makes things interesting because everyone when you look at like all the sources, People, Entertainment Weekly, Rolling Stone, all these critics, they're always just like old white dudes.
Fair enough.
And I think a lot of these old white dudes are probably threatened by boy bands in their masculinity at some point because some girl probably hurt them. I don't know. I'm making assumptions completely.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the who wrote the user specifically. I don't see names attached to them. Just the
I'm making absolute assumptions here. It must be the alcohol.
But if you do go through the user reviews and you see all the like 10 out of 10 reviews, it's a lot of Michelle's, a lot of Juliet's.
Really?
a lot of Tiffany. Yeah. Like, and the ones that are like,
but that's why I said like the majority
the ones that are
of
like
critics.
Zero, this album sucks are like, you know, a guy named like Drew. Drew could be a girl.
It's probably fucking, it's Jason, always a dude. Jake, Brody. It's always Brody.
Ned.
Brody.
Hot Carl is one of them.
But that's the thing.
His review is just, this was really, really bad.
Of course it was, because you're a dude who feels threatened by a boy band. Like, and the attention they get from the women, where I feel like these critics are, who are like that, they don't take what women like seriously. They don't take what girls enjoy as actual talent or you know, they just kind of throw it away. And I don't think that's fair.
That's a decent assessment, I would say, for sure. Because I know that like me personally, like when strictly marketed that way, when there's no cross appeal to like, because I can definitely enjoy things that women enjoy, but sometimes things are like when they're like so specifically like targeted, like just dialed in, like laser beam focused. Of course, like this, what's the enjoyment for me? Like, I'm not involved. Like, I'm not included anyway, right? So, I mean, I'm not going to take it personally. That's the thing, is that I think you're kind of commenting is that some of these people seem threatened by it, you know, almost. But we also all have the bad habit of taking our thoughts and feelings and opinions a little too seriously sometimes too, you know. Like,
that's true. And then I think a lot of times when you're just dealing with love songs in general, they're just going to be in most cases marketed towards the opposite sex. But if you're doing songs that are just like silly fun party tunes, a song like Larger Than Life, that's pretty much just thanking the fans for being there. That's going to be probably something that's more, maybe something you'd be likely to listen to. Right.
Yeah, maybe.
You mentioned the remix. The remix is just a song about a girl who's a wallflower letting her hair down.
Yeah. And honestly, what got me into that song, like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, this is going to be in my rotation forever. But for now, while it was fun, was just like, oh, I kind of hear the clever play that they're doing with like the idea of like the remix, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what that means for pop music and what that means for them. They're like, look at us. We're old and we have to fucking rethink this shit all the time. Like, you know, it's the remix. So getting kind of back to where we were, cause we were kind of going through the track listing a little bit. You know, I think that Poster Girl, Lose It All, those are, now I'm trying to remember them specifically. I think Poster Girl is more of a straight up like pop song.
Very much so. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Lose It All, I'm trying to have a hard time remember that one. That one comes off a little more melody, Lose It All. Right?
You're going robot. Lose It All is just kind of like a typical pop ballad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the thing though.
There's a lot of different writers on everything. There's like so many different writers. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say, now here, I want to know what you think of the song Climbing the Walls, because I had a very specific reaction to this song.
Oh.
And if I had to pick a very Naomi song out of this whole album, like something that like, from what I know of your taste in music and some of the bands and stuff that you like, that I would say Climbing the Walls has to be your song on the album.
It's up there. The chorus, I love the chorus of this song melodically. Yeah. I love it.
It's got an early 90s, like super rock ballad, Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
This could be a Bon Jovi song.
Charlie's just laying back, eh? He's just
I don't have a lot of a... See, I wrote... I told you when I said the thing about Linkin Park, I said, this is the other note I wrote about this album.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to say about this one.
That's fair.
I listened to it.
You're taking it all in. I get it.
Sure.
But did you get, okay, Charlie,
I don't know,
like,
this is very, yeah, it's very me.
Other than, yeah, you were saying Linkin Park or whatever, but like listening through the, did you get that vibe again? Or did you go like,
I mean, I got a couple of like different vibes, like you were like just the kind of stuff that you're saying, you know, maybe a little bit more pop punk or maybe a little bit more rock and roll or whatever. But like,
well, okay, I think by this part of the album is where they really lean into like the rock ballad. And like I said, Climbing the Walls could for sure be like a Bon Jovi, like,
oh. And it modulates too, which I love.
Yeah, it does.
I love when songs modulate.
I was listening to it going like, man, there's like a, I could hear a Euro metal band doing this song. You know, it's missing a, yeah. It's missing like somebody doing like a response background vocal with like a growl or like a face melting guitar solo or God forbid a keytar solo, you know, but
fuck, it, I hope like, there's a keytar in the video we're going to watch. But anyway,
but part of me wants to see if somebody out there has maybe gone and taken this in like that direction, gone full on power metal ballad with Climbing the Walls, but it has got some real like,
do you
classic,
like the song?
I don't know. There was part of me that was kind of enjoying the fact that it was so over the top epic in its production. And like, you know, like,
it's a Max Martin joint.
Yeah. We talked about Siberia already, but then here's where the thing is, they're still doing, so that Siberia feels like less of that. It's very ballady, but it's definitely, it's like, you know, you're right. It's a more stripped down song. I think that they sampled a band or something and, you know, they cut it up and made a song out of it. I think that Safest Place to Hide is a secret, sneaky Christian rock song.
I think it's the most forgettable song on the album, other than Never Gone.
Yeah, I definitely got that like, oh, somebody wrote a song for Jesus and changed a few words to make this a boy band ballad.
It's possible. I got to read the lyrics. I have never read them or paid attention to them. It's very possible, though, because Brian Littrell is very well known for being outspoken about being a Christian. He has a solo Christian album.
Oh God, is this his song?
He's not featured as a writer on it.
It just has that vibe for sure. It's like it's almost like that South Park joke where it's like you just change the word like baby in a love song to Jesus. You know, like it's not quite that on the nose, but like I don't know.
No, this is still a love song because
I feel like it was rewritten to be a love song. I feel like it started off as a Christian rock ballad,
and that they just wanted to make it go commercial, so they gave it to Backstreet Boys and made it into a
tweak it a bit
love song.
It doesn't it sound like just the name?
This song is about married people.
Yeah, but then you know you're kind of married to the Lord, right? Like. just the way the delivery maybe is the way it sells it, where he's like, "You're my safe place to hide." You know, it's like I've been to some, you know, Christian rock concerts, and it has the same delivery, it has the same feel.
Oh yeah,
I just feel like it could be right. Like
it could be. This song could totally be written as a Christian song. You just change a few things here and there for sure.
I'm not saying there's anything so on the nose, like so just the delivery, just the way some of the lines, just the chorus, you know, can you see me? Here I am.
Safest place.
Here where I've always been. And when words are not enough, I climb inside your heart and still find like, there's nothing in that specific enough about like another person. And that climb inside your heart thing. I'm like, oh, I just got Christian rock vibes from it. That's all. I just got serious Christian rock vibes from it.
Hey, Carmen.
Yeah. This could be, what was the
plus one?
Faith plus one.
Yeah.
This could be a Faith plus one song, right?
What about that classic boy band song called Finger Bang?
Finger bang bang you into my life.
I'm gonna finger bang bang your girl and it's all right. Mm-hmm. What was that band called? They were called Finger Bang, weren't they?
Oh, I do not remember.
I don't remember that.
Jeez. But they were a legacy. Remember, they were a legacy act.
Wow. How?
Well, because Randy Martin was, or Randy Martin,
Randy,
know, Randy,
Randy Marsh,
Marsh. Marsh. There he goes. He was the original member of a boy band.
Oh. Right.
And he was warning Stan that he doesn't want to join because things go wrong.
He didn't want him to have to be, to do this.
Go through what he went through.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
With the connection. So hi, baby. Oh my God. We're remembering about South Park. It's just like meta. Okay. Well,
back on task.
We've talked about this whole record. I think that we missed any, like any tracks or any information that really needs to get out there.
No.
No, you know, I just thought it would be interesting to kind of go in this lane or whatever. Like, you know what? Here's the thing about this album, if I have to walk away from it and say anything about it, is that, like, I didn't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know? In fact, I even found a few small things to enjoy about it here and there.
Mm.
It's just, I don't know, it's not for me.
That is fair.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Charlie.
Okay, well, we're saying things about the album. I would say that, and now obviously I've not listened to every album ever, clearly, but it's interesting to hear an album that I've never heard anything from before, you know, and to have something new. It's unfortunate that for me, it all sort of washed together. Like after the first couple of songs, they really all, like you guys are talking about specific parts and I'm like, yeah, I don't know this at all.
You know, it's so funny too, because you saying that, a lot of times the albums that we have listened to throughout this experience with this podcast, I feel the same way about albums that you guys love and can literally tell you about this moment and this song and that, and where I feel the exact same way.
So it's a shoe on the other foot situation.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But it's interesting, isn't it?
It's totally interesting. And I always, you know, I love the idea of the challenge. It's part of why this podcast is so much fun is because you get to listen to so much stuff that maybe you haven't heard before or you haven't really paid the most attention to, except for when it doesn't really work for you, you know?
Well, that's the chance you take, right?
Yeah,
It's not all going
to
be fun.
That's what happens when you go to a store and dive into the bargain bin.
Exactly. Thank you, Charlie.
But this is me a lot on this show, where a lot of the time I'm like, no. But I'm cool. I'm cool checking it out because I tell myself all the time that I need to broaden my horizons. So I try, and a lot of times I go, yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm
well,
good.
And that's how I feel as well, though. Like, I mean, yeah, I think the dynamic is that I think we're generally a little more open to more music.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, is like it's good to have the differences of opinion, right? And in this case, it's nice that it's you kind of flip the script a little bit where you know. But
I would also say that it's not like this is not like an album that I would be like, oh, I hate this, I never want to hear it again.
It's not like it irritated the shit out of
you. Only time I've ever heard it,
no.
And I probably will never hear it again because it's very forgettable for me. You know what I mean? Like I could be walking through a shopping center. And maybe one of these songs comes on, it's going to be white noise for me.
Well, there's a good point. Is I think there's something this album is lacking. Hooks.
It's not very hooky.
No. All I hear is hooks.
Disagreed.
Really?
Jeremy disagrees.
Yeah, I couldn't
walk away. Climbing the walls, man? That chorus? That's a fucking hook.
See, I couldn't walk away from singing any of this like just by memory. I'd have to listen to it and study it and be like, okay, that's how that goes. That's like,
yeah, this is a real interesting viewpoint on how our brains work and how they're all so different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All I hear is hooks.
But that's part of the experiment is being open to new experiences and learn how to listen and pay attention and all that sort of stuff and be engaged and try some new stuff out. So, okay. The last thing that we should say about this record is whether or not, well, two last things. Does it deserve to be in the bargain bin? Charlie's nodding.
I believe it does.
I'd say no.
I'm going to put it in I knew you were going to say no. I'm going to put it in a third category. I'm going to put it on, it's on the BOGO wall.
Well, no, see, the idea of the bargain bin is it's not, if you have a strong artist and they have a not strong entry, this would be that.
Yeah, you true. Fair enough.
Like, yeah, I like the Backstreet Boys, but
this wasn't their best work.
They get a C.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Then I'll have to agree with you. I just can just picture this thing so clearly back in the day at like HMV being in that, like, you know,
you've seen it.
Creedence Clearwater Revival's greatest hits with a sticker on it that says like buy one, get one. And then way down on the shelf, there's the Backstreet Boys Never Gone. And you're like, oh, I do need to get my sister a gift for Christmas.
Like, do you honestly mean that you remember seeing this in stores?
No. But I'm like, if I were to, like, you know what I'm saying? Where would you find this in the store?
And nothing stabs me more in the heart than when you go into a Walmart and there's the $5 bin and they got a big picture of Bon Jovi next to it. Like, fuck off.
Two for $10 or something.
Fuck off.
Those are full of those like 16 greatest hits and stuff. Yeah.
You know,
those like endless collection of like Elvis where it's like three CDs full of Elvis. You're like, I've got Spotify.
It's like KTEL and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. They're interesting. Every once in a while though, you know, you just, when you're bored and you got to kill time in a Walmart.
I've enjoyed this experience today because I finally got to stand up and defend an album that I enjoy.
Yeah.
I'll try and think of some more stuff like this. Try and go these lanes a little more. We're gonna have to like pick some like, I don't know. We're going to pick like a Muppets like album or something. Make Charlie defend.
No, man. No, yes. We do just fine for me. We pick stuff like Macho Man, Power Man 5000. Like there's, I love that shit.
That was a different lane though. That was
Power Man was Macho Man that. was bargain bin for sure.
Oh yeah, you suggested that one though, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
you're gonna look at the numbers and go, oh well, this was our least listened to episode ever because we're talking about the Backstreet Boys.
No, people will see Backstreet Boys.
No, people see Backstreet Boys in the and then they'll be like, these guys talking about the Backstreet Boys. This is probably actually, we're taking a chance here. This might be some hate mail coming our way. So if you want to hate on us,
hold on. If you want to hate on us,
that's right. You can call us.
You can give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 780-851-8785.
Or if you want to use your thumbs and not your mouth, you can find us on all the social media apps. And we put them all in one spot called the website. Charlie, what is that website?
Oh, that website is l2lpodcast.com.
All right. And then, of course, our hosts, you know, they are fully realized people. They're not stuck in a boy band having to hash out, you know, the stuff that producers force them to create. They make their own stuff. Like, Charlie, what do you put out in the world?
Oh, man, I put T-shirts out in the world and merch and all fun things like that. Just go to oldmandesign.com. I'll show you some stuff. I'll show you a thing or two. Come on down to oldmandesign.com. We'll get you sorted. I'll show you a thing or two. Come get some T-shirts.
All right. And Naomi, what do you got going on?
There's this other podcast and it's called Dope Nostalgia. And we talk to people and about people who are famous in the 90s. This will be our second birthday episode coming up. So we're going to have some friends from the show, for our friends, Colin and Kendra and Jimmy, and they're going to join me and go over the last year.
Nice. Happy birthday. All right. Mm-hmm. And then of course, patreon.com/learningtolisten. Just help us out. Head on over there and throw us a dollar or two, and then we'll keep making all this great content. And while we're at it, we throw a little bit of bonus content up there. We put up episodes early. You get to hear us warm up the mics and talk all about peaches and whatever that means. So patreon.com/learningtolisten.
Well, let me tell you, hold on a second. About, you know, I think that the bonus content for this episode is as long as the episode.
Yeah.
It might close. Be.
Yeah, I think it is. It's
but once we started talking about peaches,
yeah, thing, like, we hit on a topic and, you know, like we couldn't let it go. We had to explore that topic.
Fully explore it, all its nooks and crannies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Patreon aside, you guys want to know what we're doing next week?
Yes. What are we doing next week?
We're going to get back into our Rolling Stones greatest albums of all time. So if you're not a regular listener of this show, we have been doing a series following the 100 greatest albums of all time, as decided by the Rolling Stone magazine. And we are going to be doing number 83 on that list, Dusty Springfield, Dusty in Memphis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, actually, the list is...
No, not Stevie Nicks.
The list is going in an interesting direction. I think, Naomi, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised coming up here. So, Dusty Springfield first. So okay, that's what we're going to be doing next time. And then we just wrap up the show. So how do I do that? I just say, I don't know, man. You know, somebody else come up with that. I'm tapped out on wrapping up jokes. Hold on.
You know, you can just say it, right?
Yeah, but I just feel like I'm letting people down if I just say it. I'm letting myself down.
You're putting too much pressure on yourself, man. Just say it.
I really am. Okay, you got it. Wrap it up. Thank you.
Fuck, now I had one for you.
Did you have one?
Yeah, when you're in a boy band and there's peaches everywhere, you know you better wrap it up.
Thank you, Charlie. That's the real ending.
The music was fun, yeah. And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting a move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.